This is Janine Spurgeon. Today is September 4th, 2020, and I'm interviewing John Carter, who is a Plainfield resident, a senior, and a longtime history teacher, and we're going to get his perspective on the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic. When you first heard about the virus, what were your thoughts about it?
Well, I think that I followed the news fairly closely, so I knew that it was pretty serious, but I think it was probably when my youngest daughter showed up at my house unannounced one day. I think it was in early March, and I didn't think much of it. Then I noticed she was standing at the pantry with the door open, and she had her phone open to Skype, or I'm not sure what it was, but her sister was on it also. So they were looking at my pantry, and they were going over things, they were talking about what needed to be bought, and then she said, well, Dad, can I have your credit card? Okay. So off she went, and she came back like an hour and a half later, about $250 worth of stuff to stock me up for the endurance of the pandemic. So, that made it very clear that she was and her sister were taking it very, very seriously. I was too, but because I'm retired, I'm pretty much, I don't go out a whole lot anyway. I do go out. I go out to eat with some of my friends and ride my bike, but I'm not a real socially active person. So it wasn't something that initially I was shocked about, but I knew it was pretty serious. I could tell that from the early reports, especially even as early as late January and early February.
Have your thoughts changed since then?
Oh, I've become aware it's a lot more serious. I mean, this is no joke. This is pretty serious, especially when you look at the numbers and when you, in our own family, since we've had a positive test identified. So, mm-hmm. You take it pretty seriously. And, especially since we have a newborn in our family and I'm of a certain age, I keep thinking, years from now when people look at this, will that phrase mean anything? A certain age, will that mean anything? I don't know.
Right.
But I think I try to be careful myself.
Okay, great. How do you think the pandemic has affected our community as a whole?
I think there's a heightened awareness of it, that's for sure. I see people wearing masks quite a few places, and businesses have either slowed down or some have closed temporarily, some have closed permanently. One thing that surprises me is that it seems to me, more traffic during the daytime. Before the pandemic, I used to go down and put out my youngest daughter's dogs, and I'd drive home, and she lives on Main Street, and I could quite often turn out. There was very little traffic. Today, there's more traffic, or not today, but since the pandemic began, more people are out of work or are at home, I guess, and it seems to me there's more people driving around during daytime than there used to be. But I think the community has overall taken it fairly seriously, although, we are because of our proximity to the city of Indianapolis and being in a metropolitan area generally, we have a higher incidence just because of the demographics and the higher per capita, more people packed into a smaller area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has the pandemic changed your relationships with your family, your friends? Has things changed?
I think two things are clear. One is that we interact much more than we did before. I talk every day with my daughters. Mm-hmm. It used to be, it would be every couple of days, and we'd talk on the phone or whatever. My oldest daughter is in Bloomington, and I would go down there every once in a while, every couple of weeks maybe, and have lunch or supper with her or something like that. We don't do that anymore, but we do talk more often. So I think actually we're closer in the sense that we focus on communication much more, but we don't see each other physically nearly as much.
I've had a lot of people say that. That's a really nice development.
Yeah.
What have been the biggest challenges that you've faced during this time?
I think physically and there's not much I've really been challenged with. I think it's been easy. I've told many people this has been easier on me because I'm retired, because I'm fairly financially secure. I just don't have personally, a lot of worries. I don't like being cooped up as much as I am, although I ride my bike almost every day just to get out, and sometimes I take a car ride just to go out and see that there's an outside world.
Right.
And usually I drive out and try to get myself lost so I can find my way back, and it's a form of
that's funny.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people do it accidentally. They don't.
What have been your primary sources of news?
Well, I watch the news quite a bit. I should say I consume the news quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I subscribe to the New York Times. I take the Indianapolis Star. I don't watch cable news very much. In fact, I hardly ever watch cable news. I also subscribe to the New Yorker. I do have friends on Facebook, and they post things. And like a lot of people, I think to a certain extent, I am in a political bubble because most of my friends are fairly, most of them are ex-teachers. Most of them are fairly liberal, and, you know, those are the things that we share. But I do try to expose myself to views that are not always compatible with my particular viewpoint.
What are your sources for that, for alternative views, like Fox or?
I don't know. I can't do the Fox thing. I'm sorry. I just cannot do Fox. But a number of my friends and I myself, I've got friends who are Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, they post. We have back and forth. There's a lot of back and forth that goes on, especially Facebook. Facebook is a place, I think, where you see more give and take, especially the George Floyd and the Kenosha situation. You know, the people who are Trump supporters tend to be they view the incidents in terms of people violating the law, and
mm-hmm.
the police, they tend to be more pro-police.
Right.
And so, you know, I get a pretty good dose of other points of view.
Have you known anybody that's changed their minds about anything during the pandemic?
No, I don't know anybody. My sense is that there are people who are very, I think people are paying attention. That's one thing I do sense, is that people are
mm-hmm.
paying attention to the news more than they paid attention in the past. And again, you got to keep in mind, there's stuff posted by people online saying this former Trump supporter, yada, yada, yada. Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if that stuff is true or not. You know,
it's
just, so personally, no, I don't know anybody.
What about the community leaders here in Hendricks County? How do you think they responded?
I think that the problem is most of us don't pay attention to local news. That's what I think one of the fundamental problems is, that we're so absorbed and exposed to national news stories that local tends to get second place. The one thing I would say is that Senator Young has posted, he no longer does it, but he did post for several weeks the COVID numbers for Hendricks County, which I thought was very good. And I thank him because I thought that was really good that he did that. I wish he would continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I do see in some of the postings, when I look at school board meetings or town council events, people are sitting socially distanced and wearing masks. But then again, I've seen people, in fact, I saw a story just the other day about Senator Young in town. He was looking at the new parking garage, and he was seen with I don't know whether it's Kent McPhail or Brandgard,
mm-hmm.
one of them, and they were walking down the street, not socially distancing and not wearing masks.
Mm.
But, you know, I understand. I think overall they've done an okay job, but I think their problem is that, you know, this is a pandemic isn't just here in Plainfield, but it's all over the United States and all over the world. So,
right,
but
yeah.
I think that's one of the problems, really, of our political system too, is because we are so divided up. You can have, you know, as we know, there are some places and parts of the country where they just aren't doing anything. You know, they think it's all an exaggeration. Nobody should wear a mask. They don't care. You know, that kind of thing. Other
right.
places, people are very, very, you know, almost anal mask wearing attitude.
One thing that I found real curious is that, you know, Indiana was one of the first states to open up, and we don't seem to be having the terrible surge that a lot of the other states are having. Do you have any idea what reason for that might be? I've been trying to figure it out, and I can't figure it out myself.
Well, my suspicion is that those numbers, that this is a very fluid situation. Things change from week to week, and a lot depends on, obviously, people's behavior, and we can't really, you know, monitor what everybody else is doing. I just saw this morning in the paper that Hendricks County is ranked in the moderate. We're not in the severe. We're not in the best category. We still have cases. There are still a few deaths occasionally, but I don't have a really good answer for that. I wish I did.
Yeah, it's curious. So as a history teacher, I thought we'd get a better perspective from you. One question I have is, you know that history can be skewed by powers that be, and then in the instance that the truth has been blurred, maybe 50 to 100 years from now, what would you most want students to know about this crisis?
Well, I would say, I would say the thing that concerns me most is the politicalization of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, can be laid right at the doorstep of the president. He clearly, very clearly from the first, in fact, he continues. Just yesterday, he criticized Joe Biden for wearing masks.
Right.
Joking and making fun of him for doing that, you know,
mm-hmm.
which I think is just shows the fact that it's become a political issue, which is really, really sad. I think that's, and again, that's a reflection, I think, of our social and political divide. It's also a reflection of the ambivalence and disinterest that people have in politics. Generally, you know, it's become sort of a game that you watch on TV and on social media.
Yeah, that's
one,
true.
One side trying to one-up the other, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is really sad. And I think, too, the other thing is it's revealed the deep social issues in our society, racism.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're seeing that, you know, the minority communities, or what we now call people of color, those communities are having much higher rates of the COVID. But also there's been some good things, which is there's really some wonderful examples of volunteerism and people who are the first responders and nurses and doctors who really put themselves in harm's way and have done just amazingly wonderful things. So that's one issue. The other issue would be since I taught government for a long time, we are a nation that has two conflicting ideals, which is the common good versus individual freedom. And I think that, you know, individual freedom is reflected in the fact that a lot of people are of the, you know, of the opinion, you can't make me wear a mask because it's my right to not wear a mask, you know,
right.
Which is, I can see the argument there. But again, the common good is something that tends to take second place. And I think that's been the trend, really, from the 70s onward. You know, I grew up in the 1950s in the shadow of World War II. And in those days, you know, we were still in a time when we were thinking in terms of the nation as a whole and, you know, what is best for everybody, even though there were a lot of problems that were not being addressed then. That was a much more commonly accepted than today. You know, it's beginning in the 60s and 70s with the do your own thing, man, you know, kind of thing. And now we have today, you know, individual freedom is much more prevalent than the common good.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Which means, you know, sacrifices for the other person is something we are less inclined to do, especially if you don't like the other guy and consider the other guy a rotten person, you know. So.
Yeah, and with the political divide, obviously that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's an interesting perspective, yeah. I've seen that with people saying, I don't have to wear a mask. And when you ask them, well, what about everybody else? And they just don't care, you know, and it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
I thought that was, that's an interesting that you said that it started in the 70s, because I've been wondering about that. I mean, is that something that we've always been doing? Is that the American way? But I guess it's not, since it was different.
I'm not conversant enough on that issue. But I do think it's clear that, you know, the do your own thing. But if you think about how many times have you seen or heard a college or high school commencement speaker say, follow your dream, you know, do the thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
this kind of thing, you know, which is, but again, I know a lot of speakers also talk about do something for humanity, not just for yourself. But
right, yeah.
It's a very, very, I think, a common theme of our time that we do emphasize that. And you can see when you look at countries that have been successful in dealing with COVID, they have tended to be the countries that have a more authoritarian form of government. China is probably the classic example. They simply mandate that certain behaviors are required. and that is not the case here.
Since we're talking globally, how does this pandemic rank as far as others go, as far as scope and global impact?
Yeah, that's hard to say from within. I think some years from now we may have a clearer picture.
Right, yeah.
I'm sure it's ironic, people saying 2020, hindsight, something we don't have right now because we're living in it.
Right.
It's hard to say. I don't know what the hard numbers are, so I can't really give a specific example. I'm pretty much amazed that in a lot of places things are, functioning pretty normally. But I think the problem is there are a lot of places that are not in the radar, not seen on the radar right now, especially very poor areas of the world that are really having some really hard times. Clearly, I think one of the results has been, and I think this has been a trend for the last several years, will be a movement away from globalization, at least politically, even though economically nothing is likely to change.
Mm-hmm.
The president talks about America first, but if you look at Wall Street, if you look at the economy, we are deeply involved in a global economy. That is not something that you can just wish away. And the trends are pretty much towards globalization.
Is there any advice you'd want to give world leaders now regarding the pandemic?
I'd say,
in all of your wisdom.
Yeah, well, put on your big boy pants, and let's get serious about this. Actually, Angela Merkel in Germany, I wish we had more of her around. She seems like, even though she's having a tough time there, too. It's not really anywhere. But, if I were to ask for, if you were to ask me who we should model, I would say her leadership has been, and obviously, of course, New Zealand, I forget her name.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that. She's amazing.
But, I know it's entirely a different situation. But, Sweden is a good example of a country that, you probably know this, they just said, well, we're just going to continue on. Well, they thought herd immunity would take over. But, of course, what's happened is they've been hit hard. They've had serious problems. Their next-door neighbor, Norway, they were pretty stringent in their approach. And they've had far fewer cases and far fewer deaths. So the example of Sweden is one not to follow.
Yeah. I remember they were talking about Sweden in the beginning here. Look at Sweden. They're not going to do anything.
So they don't talk about, the people don't like masks, don't want to talk about that right now.
Do you have anything else any tidbits of wisdom that you'd like to give us before we end it?
I think one point was going to make on your first question was that the thing that concerns me, and again, because I taught government, is just the declining faith in government, the lack of participation. Most people can name the president, and they can name, some high-ranking leaders like the Secretary of State. But you ask them, who's your mayor, who's your congressman, who's your state representative, your state senator, sometimes even who's the governor, and they just, they look at you with a blank expression. I'm in a book club, and the book we read is called Station 11. If you want to read a book that's really interesting, it's a dystopian novel about a future pandemic. It's really interesting because, this book is written by a woman who wrote it, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, long before this happened. And so it's really interesting to view the world that she imagines in her book versus, the reality of what we're experiencing today.
So who's the author?
Mandel is her last name, M-A-N-D-E-L, I think.
Oh, okay.
And it's
sounds
a really
good.
Interesting book that will give you a different perspective of pandemic. I must point out that their pandemic is much more serious than ours, at least at this point. But It's a good book for getting a perspective.
Well, John, thank you so much for participating. We really appreciate your perspective. Well, have a great day.
Thank you, Janine, for doing this. Take care.
No problem. Thank you. Bye-bye.